Test.
Please record. My name is Bernard Director. I work in the Scottsbluff County Public Defender's Office, and our office has had the privilege and honor of providing legal representation to William Reed in this matter. Following the acceptance of Mr. Reed's waiver of preliminary hearing in Scottsbluff County Court, an information was filed in this file with the Scottsbluff County District Court that contained charges of second-degree murder, class 1B felony, and use of a deadly weapon in a felony, a class 2 felony. And those charges are related to the death of Christopher Reed on or about April 22, 2016, in Scottsdale County, Nebraska. Mr. Reed enters pleas of not guilty to those charges on May 6, 2016, in District Court, and the matter came on at trial in District Court on February 27, 2017, February 28, 2017, and March 1, 2017. On March 1, 2017, jury returned verdicts of guilty on both counts. And on April 13, 2017, Mr. Reed was sentenced to serve sentences with the Nebraska Department of Corrections of not less than 40 years, no more than life imprisonment on the charge of second-degree murder. He was given 357 days credit for time served. And he was also sentenced to serve not less than 10 years or more than 20 years on the charge of use of a deadly weapon in a felony. The sentences were ordered to serve consecutively on Mr. Reed and consecutively. Your Honors, in this appeal, Mr. Reed presents two issues to this court's consideration. The first issue relates to the offer and receipt of Exhibit 1, which was a digital recording from Officer Houghton's body camera showing Officer Houghton's initial contact with Mr. Reed on April 22, 2016. It also shows Mr. Officer Houghton taking Mr. Reed into custody, placing him in the patrol vehicle, and also transporting him to the local hospital, where the video continues to show him being carried into the hospital, held in a triage area for a while, and then having him placed in one of the treatment rooms. Our other issue relates to the sufficiency of the evidence that was presented at this trial to determine to establish that Mr. Reed kills Christopher Kessler.
So it's my understanding your argument relates to the portion of the body cam video that occurred at the hospital.
Actually, I think our primary concern was not only what happened at the hospital, but what also happened on the way to the hospital. It's about 20 minutes of the video was taken up by the trip to the hospital and then the time at the hospital before the investigation.
What part of the at trial was that the objection? As I read it, I thought there was really no objection until the hospital court at the time of trial that was made by the defense.
Well, I know I wrote in our brief that we were concerned about the trip to the hospital because that contained some statements that he had made, threats of being made, and a lot of that was the same type of conduct that occurred on the on the way to the hospital and at the hospital as well.
Well, if the objection was only to the portion at the hospital, would you agree that his behavior and his statements were similar to those that happened previously in the transport to the hospital?
I think for the most part they were. I think we hear Mr. Reed again making the admission that he killed his brother. His brother asked him to kill him. We have the statements of, well, his emotional state. I think if he contemplates their point, he's a hospital, he's making threats to the officers, he's making threats to hospital staff. Cursing at him, trying to hurt himself, or saying on the way up, you know, banging his head on the cage. And those were things that we believe that the jury did have.
And is that reviewed for an abuse of discretion?
I believe so. Section 274.
How do you respond to the state's argument that any error is harmless error, that it was cumulative evidence to admissible evidence prior to that point?
Well, my argument would be that not only was it unfairly prejudicial, but it was needlessly cumulative. There was evidence, there was sufficient evidence, and there was evidence at the scene, his actions at the scene at the house, the evidence that the officers were able to obtain from the residence, inside and outside of the residence, plus what happened with Mr. Reed at the house. It's our position that anything more than that was just was an attempt to use emotions to dissuade the jury from even wanting to consider a lesser included offense for the manslaughter. And that was basically what our goal was in this case, to try to get the jury to think about manslaughter.
Didn't he testify at trial that didn't have a memory of the occurrence, at least for part of it? And I think the defense was he had no intent to kill his brother.
Right.
And so would the videotape and the continual admissions and statements that his brother asked him to tell him, would that go to that element so that it is relevant?
Well, I think it's relevant to a degree, to the point where he's at the house before he's put in the patrol car. He at least said 15 times that he killed his brother when his brother had asked him to kill him. And then it continues on the way to the hospital, continues at the hospital. And so, I mean, the jury was able to make that determination from watching the first 10, 15 minutes of the video, that he did, he admitted that he killed his brother, that his brother had asked him to kill him, that he was drunk, and that there was nobody else, it was nobody's fault for his brother died.
Is the jury entitled, though, I think this case represents something of the new reality of a lot of these cases now with the body cam, recorded content. But is the jury entitled to not just hear what is said, but how it's said? Is that part of their determination as to the...
I think it is to the extent that it's not being used for the purpose of trying to get them to reach a decision on an involvement. I think enough was enough in terms of that. And it got to the point where, especially when he's making some comments about his stepfather and everything else, the cursing and all that. And it was, you could just see, if you watch the video, you could see his emotional state, his complicated, from where he's, you know, there's just nothing good being said, and it's just, and it just wasn't the situation.
What's the time you have time about that? like to hear your argument regarding the intent issue.
Well, thank you. Very briefly, with respect to the issue of insufficiency of evidence requiring state to prove intent to kill. The only direct evidence I believe that I can remember from the trial was the fact that Mr. Reed's statement. And, you know, he described what he remembered. He talked about the events leading up to the killing, that included the brothers drinking in the home. They weren't having any problems with each other during that entire week and up until this time. He remembers his brother wanting to trace a picture off the TV screen and then taking that picture in the kitchen and working on it a little bit. And then the next thing he remembers falling down, landing on top of his brother. His brother gasping for breath, hears this gurgling sound, tries to do some things to, he realizes what happened. In fairly good detail, he describes what he did after that until he gets back into the police car and then he says he forgot again what he lost memory of what happened there. You know, state used those statements, and those statements are certainly relevant, you know, for that purpose. But the state also relied on some of the physical evidence that was there, you know, the nature of the injuries to Christopher's body, the fact that what they found in the house, the knife, and those things. But it's our argument that those things are probative, and those were things that that were proper for the jury to hear. But there was also, I think, physical evidence from which a jury could draw inferences that maybe there was no. And one of the things would be maybe the lack of any defensive injuries on Christopher's body. His hands didn't have any cuts on it. His arms didn't have any cuts on him or anything like that. It's a defensive type injury. The house, you see from the photograph, it's a very small house. It's a very cluttered house with small rooms in it. And the only evidence of any struggle, other than the fact that Christopher's body was there, you see the TV knocked over, and you see a fan knocked over on the floor. And I think you also see a computer keyboard kind of hanging off of the little shelf there, So there's no
thing. Mr. Strucker, thank you. I know he's taking you over your time. So we will have you sit down and you'll have the apple. Thank you. How much time do we take,
Albert? 1 minute, 8 seconds.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel, and Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State House of Representatives. Cullen argued the district court erred in allowing the entirety of the officer's body camera footage to be played for the jury and argued there was insufficient evidence to support a conviction for second-degree murder. The state believes the district court did not abuse its discretion in allowing the footage to be played, and that the evidence, when taken in the light most favorable to the state, is sufficient to support the conviction. And I'll address each of these arguments in turn. Appellant argued that only the first 10 minutes of Officer Houghton's body camera footage should have been played to the jury, because he believes the relevance of the rest of the video is outweighed by unfair prejudice. To start, the video was relevant because appellant claims to not remember anything after he was placed in the handcuffs, and this video shows that time period that appellant claims to have forgotten. The statements he makes during this time period, immediately after stabbing his brother, which he also does not remember, are very important because they help the state establish appellant's intent to kill. He states on the video multiple times that he killed his brother and that his brother asked for him to do it. The video did show appellant making some threats and using bad language. The jury was also aware that appellant was drinking. Appellant testified that during this time period he was hysterical and he does not remember anything that occurred. The jury was instructed on each element of the offense that the state had to prove in order for it to find appellant guilty of second-degree murder, and we've not shown that the portions of the video to which he objects are so unfairly prejudicial that the jury convicted him because of his actions in that portion of the video.
Can you enlighten me about when the objection at trial was made?
And I was looking at that, Your Honor. And Judge Artwood, to your point, I have in my notes, and I don't have the line numbers, but that on page 115 of the Bill of Exceptions, that the defense does argue that he says something along the lines of, as they arrive at the hospital, he is upset, and I think it's unduly prejudicial. So mine, and they could be incorrect, but my notes were that some mention was made of that ride to the hospital. So around page 113 of board discussions is when the objection's made. So before it's placed, so I have that apology object to it, to the, that kind of two-thirds, I, you know, the second two-thirds of this.
So during the ride and at the hospital.
Correct. That was what my notes reflected. But obviously, if the board discussion shows that it was just the hospital, then the state will go with that. As you mentioned, Judge Moore, that the statements made in the ride to the hospital and at the hospital are similar to the statements that were made earlier. And I think this sort of dovetails into the argument about the sufficiency of the evidence regarding the intent to kill. Because appellant testified that the statements that he's made about, I killed my brother, he asked me to, both on the video and later the next day in an interview with investigators, was his attribution of what must have happened based on the fact that his brother was dead by stabbing. So I think it was important for the jury to be able to see the video and to hear and to be determine for themselves, was this someone kind of coolly reflecting on what must have happened by putting together all the pieces of the puzzle, or was this someone stating what had just happened for a time period that he now claims he does not remember. So I think that the video was very well lit because it allowed the jury to really to piece together what happened. So I do not believe that the appellant has shown the trial court of abuse of discretion in allowing the entire video to be played for the jury.
Is it cumulative of the statements that were made prior to being transported? Does that become prejudicial?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And again, I think the difference to me here is that appellant's statements later, his claims that he's just assuming what must have happened, that his statements that I did this, were him putting together kind of pieces of the puzzle. And I think the number of times that he made those statements and how he made them and the different phrases that he used are important because they really show that this was not an accident. This, his brother asked him to kill him, and so he did it. And so it does get repetitive. He does say it multiple times throughout the entire portion of the video, but I think that also is important in establishing the intent to kill. Briefly turning to the sufficiency of the evidence argument, the question on appeal is whether viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, any rational trier of fact could have found the essential elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And here, appellant, while covered in blood, told multiple people multiple times that he had killed his brother, repeatedly stated that his brother had asked for appellant to kill him. Later, he told investigators in an interview that obviously he decided to do what he did. The victim also had multiple stab wounds. And this evidence, when taken in the light most favorable to the state, is sufficient to show that appellant intentionally killed the victim. While appellant did provide another explanation for why he made the statements that he did regarding the killing and the circumstances surrounding it, the jury was free to disregard that explanation if they didn't find it credible. There was sufficient evidence presented regarding the intent to kill, insufficient evidence to support the conviction for second-degree murder.
I know it's not an issue on appeal, but remind me, was there an intoxication defense used in this trial?
I believe appellant did say that he was drunk. I cannot recall from the record if there was. I don't believe there was instruction. I do think at one point appellant was asked if he was intoxicated and if he voluntarily drank the liquor. And there was a testimony about the blood alcohol content of the victim, and appellant did testify regarding the amount of alcohol that he could recall. But I don't believe there's any instruction. I'm not positive on this. If there are no additional questions, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appellant's out of time. We appreciate your attendance here today and the case is submitted. Thank you. Thank you. Next case this afternoon is State v. State.